Welcome back to Glitchcast episode number 43. This week, we are talking about A Simple Favor, which is the Paul Feig directed movie based on a best-selling novel, I think?
Yeah, I believe so.
Starring Blake Lively and Anna Kendrick. It's sort of a, like a crime thriller story in a way? I don't even know.
We'll talk about this film's identity and tone and how confused it is in a bit, but look forward to that discussion.
Yeah, and we have a bunch of news, movie and TV news. This is the most TV news stories we've had ever. Bunch of trailers, so we're just going to get rolling right off the bat. Movie news. We finally got our first look at Joaquin Phoenix and his makeup for the Joker. So last week that we had talked about, there were some pictures that came out of him, just like, we were just like, he just looks like someone from a Wes Anderson movie, I think is what you said. Yeah.
Yep, that's my exact description.
But they released a little like teaser video yesterday. Todd Phillips did, the director, and it's sort of him just standing there and then like smiling and then like clown lighting flashing over
him. Kind of like creepy old-timey music in the background.
Yeah, and then it cuts to him in the like clown makeup. What did you think of like how he looked?
I think it looks better in motion than it does in the picture when it shows him kind of swaying back and forth. Like, he does look creepy, and combined with the creepy music, like, I was kind of into it. But I did see a report that this is just from a, like, screen test when he was auditioning for the role, and, like, this isn't officially real footage. But, like, if Todd Phillips is putting it out on his Instagram, yeah, it's got to be legit. So I'm still 50-50 on it. Like, I like it better than the Wes Anderson style Joaquin Phoenix still. What about you?
I actually dig it. I think I'm actually turning around on this movie. I think I might actually be excited for it.
Yeah. It as long as we don't expect, like, it's nothing's ever going to be Nolan Joker again. Mm-hmm. Like, stop trying to compare it to that. Let's see a fresh take on it. So it might be good.
I'm just worried that, have you ever seen the movie King of Comedy starring Robert De Niro? It was a Scorsese movie from like the 80s, I think. But basically, Todd Phillips has said like this is going to be like King of Comedy meets Taxi Driver. So two Scorsese movies. And King of Comedy is about like a crazy failed comedian who like kidnaps a talk show host to get onto his show. The details we know about this Joker movie is that he is a failing comedian, and somehow a talk show host plays a pivotal role in him becoming the Joker. So it's like, is it just going to be the same movie, or I don't know.
Yeah.
I just hope it's original. But yeah, so hopefully we'll get like a trailer for that, I don't know, within the next couple months, I'd imagine.
Yeah, we posted it on all of our social media. Take a look if you haven't seen it, and tell us what you think.
Yeah. Next up, this is a dumb news story, but I had to include it. Bradley Cooper cast his own dog in A Star Is Born. So generally, you know, they'll get dogs that are trained and, like, you know, actor dogs. I don't know. Show dogs?
Show dogs, there you
show
go.
Show dogs. Like that Will Arnett movie. But apparently, Bradley Cooper's just like, I'm just going to cast my own dog. And apparently the dog plays like a fairly pivotal role in the movie somehow.
Listen, if I was an actor, I'd bring Peanut, my dog, into the role.
Yeah.
As long as he could sit, stay. Like, as long as you're not needing him to do like Benji-style things like or like Homeward Bound style. Yeah. I like it. Good for B-Coop.
I know. And, I feel like more directors and actors should just have their own animals in the movies. Even if like the script doesn't call for an animal, just like bring your dog to set. Just let it hang around, you know.
What do you think what do you think the dog's paid for this? A couple Big Macs?
I saw someone make a joke. They were like, do you think the dog got the SAG minimum for this? And someone replied, no, he got the WAG minimum.
So stupid.
Next up, Michael B. Jordan is going to play a Tom Clancy character named John Clark in a new film series. So they have two movies in development right now. Without Remorse is supposed to be like the origin story of this character. And then Rainbow Six, which is obviously like a very big like video game franchise at this point, would be the follow-up to that. So we have Jack Ryan, which is a TV show now with John Krasinski. They've done plenty of Jack Ryan movies. But John Clark is a little different, apparently. Apparently he's, like, very intense, very violent, like, almost anti-hero-esque. So it's kind of interesting to see like Michael B. Jordan grabbing that role. And it'll
we loved him as Kilgrave, and he was definitely a villainous type person. I love it. This guy's hot right now.
I'm just interested in if they like tone it down to make it more like mainstream action film, or if they're like actually gonna go like kind of like dark and serious with it.
Yeah. Sorry, the Roomba just went off. I was screaming at the wife to turn it off. We don't have to cut this. DJ Roomba has a place in the podcast. Yeah, I agree. He's been in a ton of high profile stuff. And did you say what series this was, or what channel or streaming service this was going to be on?
No, I did not. It's a movie series.
So it'll be out in theaters.
Two movies, like yeah, two movies in theaters. Okay. I think it's Paramount putting it out. So.
Oh, cool.
So yeah. All right. Next up, Jamie Foxx and Joseph Gordon-Levitt coming out of nowhere. He has been doing nothing in the past 3 years.
JGL.
Yeah.
What was the last big thing he did?
The Night Before, maybe, with Seth Rogen and or Snowden.
That was forever. Snowden.
And that was also really long ago. That was like 3 years ago. But they're going to star in a Netflix sci-fi film, currently untitled, from the Catfish directors. So that's an interesting crossover there. The script concerns a drug epidemic that gives people a range of superpowers. The protagonist is believed to be a teenage actress of color who finds herself dealing the drug to help care for her family. Sources say Fox will play a family man who has suffered a great loss and is desperate to trace the drug supply line and find its designer, while JGL will play a beat cop who takes law enforcement matters into his own hands.
I'm kind of running out of room for like heroes type shows and superhero type shows. Like when Heroes the TV show came out, I was like frothing at the mouth for any sort of show like that, where, you know, superpowers and somebody gets all these cool powers. But like, we're overwhelmed with that stuff these days. I don't know about this.
Yeah, I don't really care about these like offshoot fake superhero movies. Like Chronicle was enough for me, I think.
Yeah, and this sounds like it could be a little young adult.
Yeah.
The directors of Catfish.
Yeah, feels like a weird
feels like another like dumping ground Netflix movie.
Yeah, yeah. I can't say that I'm excited for it. I'm happy that JGL is back because I do like him, although he's like a little bit of a weirdo, but
yeah,
I don't know if this is gonna be good. It feels like another what was that dumb one?
Donjon?
Bright. It feels like a Bright movie. Yeah,
yeah.
Next up, we got a Child's Play reboot, spinoff kind of thing happening. Aubrey Plaza from Parks and Rec and Brian Tyree Henry from Atlanta have joined the cast. So apparently there's like the actual Cult of Chucky series that is going on still, and that's like the past couple of those movies have been like decent, I guess. And they're actually doing a TV spinoff series of that. This is also Chucky, but it's like not related to that, apparently. So film will reportedly reframe the story. A spell is involved with the doll. Aubrey Plaza is playing the mom, gives her kid this weird doll for his birthday. Brian Tyree Henry is going to play a detective investigating mysterious happenings surrounding the doll. But it says that the script follows a group of kids who get into some scary trouble a la Stranger Things and It. So that, like, come on. And then the threat this time around will be a technologically advanced toy rather than, like, possessed toy. So I don't know if I'm a fan of the technology angle.
Did you see the picture that we tweeted, Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram?
It made me laugh.
It looked like he was, like, super, like, wooden, like a ventriloquist doll almost. Shout out to my boy Luke at Orion Pictures. He's helping with the publicity for this film, and he told me he's seen some snippets. He's seen what's going on behind the scenes, and this is going to be good. So I'm holding out hope based on that word alone. So,
yeah, I mean, I'll take it. I'll trust it. I just don't like the technology angle. There was a movie that we talked about a couple weeks ago that was also similar to this, where it was like a horror story, but it was all about like phones and like shit like that. And it's just like I don't need that. I don't need to be preached to about the bad.
Yeah, we already have Black Mirror giving us crushing anxiety about technology.
Next up, Bob Iger, who runs Disney, put out some Hollywood Reporter interview and basically just talked about what is going to be happening with Star Wars movies going forward and Marvel and X-Men and that kind of stuff. But mainly Star Wars. Apparently, Star Wars production is slowing down. That's the plan. He kind of admitted that he thinks that they went like a little too fast. Obviously, Last Jedi had its haters. Solo did not perform well. And also those came out within 6 months of each other, 5 months of each other. And like, yeah. you can't be doing that. And he basically said, like, this isn't like Marvel where like we have a bunch of different possibilities and like stories to tell. Like we have to like really focus on one story, take our time with it and put it out as opposed to rushing it. And I don't necessarily think that was the problem that they were rushing stuff. I think it was more so Solo was just something that people didn't really want, and then once they basically made it twice because they had to fire the first directors. Last Jedi, you know, I have my gripes about it, and but that's like a whole nother thing. That wasn't like something that was rushed. That was just like a weird thing to do that like Rian Johnson made. Like it was a singular vision. So, I mean, I think I'm good with this. I've talked about how I don't want any more Star Wars, so.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the Star Wars fan out of the two, and even I'm feeling the fatigue. Like, I don't want the quality of these films to suffer, and I don't want my view of Star Wars to be tarnished by them just cranking out this content. And when we were hearing over the last year or two how many things they had in the works, multiple shows over multiple networks, movies, spinoffs, you knew they had to recoup their $4 billion they dropped on Lucasfilm, but I think they've already made it back in under 5 years. And yeah, now everything's close, just straight gravy and profit. So take your time, release quality content. You don't want to burn people out on the biggest movie franchise, one of the biggest movie franchises of all time. So I like Iger. I think he's a good CEO. He dropped some other tidbits in the article, too, on some Marvel stuff, right?
Yeah. He was basically talking about how he thinks it's a good idea, or this is part of the reason that they wanted to buy Fox. That was a good idea to have all the Marvel properties under the same, you know, leadership and schedule, as opposed to having like two different Marvel universes where it was like, you know, the X-Men universe at Fox and then the actual MCU at Disney. So basically he just says that he does want to integrate the X-Men into the Marvel universe, as opposed to just like leaving them as their own thing, which I think is what a lot of people want.
Yeah, that's what we want. I think we want that crossover to happen,
although at a certain point, like the X-Men, there's a lot of X-Men. It feels like it might, like, it's already pretty crowded. We were, like, Everyone was astounded when Infinity War came out and they were able to balance all those characters. You add the X-Men to that, you add the Fantastic Four to that, like, that's a lot of
people.
But
I think after Infinity War Part 2, we're going to see a lot of deaths, and, you know, whoever dies, we're going to see them kind of benched for a good amount of time, maybe 10 years before, actually knowing Disney, maybe 5 years before they reboot, you know, Tony Stark and whatnot. So I think they'll have some room to breathe after we get a little bit of a purge in the next movie. Mm-hmm. So prepare your tear ducts for that.
Bond 25 news. So a couple weeks ago, Danny Boyle got booted from it for creative differences, basically because the whatever production company owns Bond did not want to go with the script that him and his partner wrote. They went with the script that like dudes that have written the past like 15 Bonds wrote. And so he left, but they got a new director, and we were shocked by this.
Yeah.
Cary Fukunaga, who directed all of True Detective Season 1, directed Beasts of No Nation, directed the new Netflix series Maniac, was supposed to direct it, but then left because of creative differences, so that's a bit of a weird issue. And he's known for, like, kind of clashing creatively because, like, him and the writer of True Detective, that's, like, why he didn't come back for Season 2 is because they, like, hated each other because he was, like, the creative differences again, so.
From what I've heard about Cary Fukunaga, my boy does not budge. Yeah. Like, he has a vision, and you're going to let him direct this the way that he wants to, or he's out. So we'll see if we get another exit on Bond 25, but I love this decision, this choice. What about you?
Yeah, I'm pumped because he's an outstanding director. And I think it might actually work better for him because he isn't writing, and I think that was part of the problem with some of the, with it. It definitely was the problem because he wrote the script and he like wanted to go without like with that, like you said, with no budging. But then it was like too dark or too mature, I guess, too out there. So I think it's good that he's not writing the script as well. And I like this as a Daniel Craig send off because I feel like it'll be like a serious, intense movie.
Dark.
Like we'll get back to like the Casino Royale. Mm-hmm. Kind of mood.
Yeah. And in the, there's a couple gunfight scenes and like straight up action in True Detective. There's a one take that is just breathtaking. I was watching it. I remember where I was, the apartment I lived in at the time. And I turned to my wife. I go, holy shit, there hasn't been a cut for over 5 minutes. I'm on the edge of my seat here. So I really think he'll do a good job here. I'm really, really stoked for this. Now I am. I mean, Danny Boyle, I think we were both excited, but this is another level.
I think this is even better. Next up, a teaser for Space Jam 2 was put out. Not really a teaser, more of just like a teaser image. It has Bugs Bunny. It's like a locker room. Has Bugs Bunny's like nameplate and jersey. Has LeBron James and his Space Jam jersey, or his Toon Stars jersey. And then it has director's name, Terrence Nance, who hasn't really done much. He has an HBO series called Random Acts of Flyness, and that's it. And then Ryan Coogler's name, who is the director of Creed and Black Panther, as a producer. So this has been, you know, back and forth for how long?
Years.
10 years? Like, who knows? Yeah. But LeBron is in LA now. LeBron is like executive producing like 15 projects. So sounds like this might actually be happening with Coogler behind it too. That actually might be kind of interested in it.
I hate LeBron. And so I'm not excited for this, but I know he's a big role model for a lot of people, and people these days look up to him like they did MJ, even though Michael Jordan was kind of a piece of shit as a human. He was a serviceable actor in Space Jam, not terrible, but not good. So I'm mildly okay with this, but I don't know, man.
I mean, I don't care that much. Space Jam is a classic. It's not like a good movie, but it's a classic.
Of course. It's so hype. The intro, I Believe I Can Fly, the Monstars final game, like it is a classic.
The only reason that I'd be interested in this is because, one, I want yet again to prove that Michael Jordan is a better actor than LeBron, because people thought LeBron was funny in Trainwreck, and he was funny just because he was LeBron, like, doing stuff, but he was terrible at acting.
Well, he's probably just going to be LeBron doing stuff in this movie, so he'll probably get another pass.
I also just like want to know what other NBA players they'll throw in there to like take over like the Monstar roster there. But outside of that, I don't really. And also, this like random director doesn't seem like he's the right choice for like a goofy kids Looney Tunes movie. So I don't know.
Well, we put out a poster of it, or not, I guess the teaser of it, on our Instagram. Let us know what you guys think.
Yeah. Last movie news story of the week. Patrick Stewart is going to play Bosley in the Charlie's Angels reboot that is coming up. Guess what, though? Elizabeth Banks is also playing Bosley in the movie, so I don't know how that works out.
Okay. Seems like a gender thing. So they're going back to Charlie's Angels, huh? Is this a show, a movie?
This is a movie. Okay. Kristen Stewart's going to be in it.
Oh, she's extremely charismatic.
so that's good. I don't understand why there's two Bosleys. I just like, maybe there's like rival gangs, or maybe it's like a family. I don't know. Do people really care about Charlie's Angels all that much?
I don't think so, but I don't think people cared back when the Cameron Diaz led one came out and it was successful. And it got me thinking, what is Cameron Diaz up to?
Shit, you're right. I remember like looking at her IMDb a couple months ago, and she hasn't been in anything in since like
I like
Night,
her.
Night and Day with Tom Cruise. Like, I don't know. Like, it's been really long.
Like 8 years ago.
Yeah.
Well, the time is ripe for her to nostalgically play a cameo in this movie. So,
all right. So that's it for movie news. TV news now. AMC has a 10-year plan for The Walking Dead, which is already dying, as we've talked about a million times. And this 10-year plan includes multiple feature films and spin-off TV series of those feature films.
Despite their absolute trash ratings and current audience sentiment, I'm just blown away by this. Do you remember season one, how good it was with Frank Darabont at the helm? I believe he was the showrunner and director at the time. Mm-hmm. And then AMC got cheap, exited him, and then it's just, yeah, 2, 3, 4, okay. But my God, is this show frustrating. And these feature films, straight to VOD probably. Spinoffs, not a chance. This is delusional.
And it's the same guy that's going to be spearheading this movement that was the showrunner before that, like, caused it to plummet in ratings.
Yeah.
That is now not the showrunner, but, like, he's still, like, overseeing everything. So literally no faith in this. No one's interested in it anymore. I guarantee most people that are watching it are just watching because, like, they're hoping that it is ending. They want to have some sort of finality to it.
Just wait until Rick's gone. If the ratings are plummeting now, like, if I was watching the show, it'd still be just to see what happens with Rick. Mm-hmm. All these other, it's just going to be a disaster. Yeah. Once Rick leaves, I think.
Next up, this
10-year plan.
This is a huge story. Loki, Scarlet Witch, and some other Marvel characters and heroes are getting their own TV series on the Disney streaming service. And this isn't like an animated series. This isn't like they're taking the characters and putting in like TV actors. This is Tom Hiddleston, Elizabeth Olsen. All those people are going to be playing these characters for like 6 to 8 episodes in their own like miniseries on the streaming service. So like full on big budget stuff.
I saw this news and I didn't read it. I assumed it'd be like teenage Loki and teenager Scarlet Witch. What? They're actually getting the wow.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Like, everybody keeps saying it. When are we going to hit Marvel fatigue? If we don't hit it with this, we're never going to hit it.
And Kevin Feige, who runs the MCU, is overseeing this as like a hands-on producer role. So like they're very serious about this, apparently. It's interesting that they're doing this because obviously there's like the Marvel shows on ABC. There's mm-hmm. Marvel shows on Netflix. And the MCU has completely acted like those things don't exist up to this point, and now they're gonna have their own TV series. So like, do you think they're gonna acknowledge? Probably not. Still,
what's funny is the Netflix show does acknowledge the MCU, but the MCU is just like, Daredevil's not real.
Yeah.
No, I don't. I mean, I don't think I'm clamoring for a Loki or a Scarlet Witch series, but you know, we'll watch it. So
yeah. Next up, Damon Lindelof's Watchmen series that is going to be on HBO has found its composers for music. Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross are going to compose the music for the show. That's pretty big. They did the music for like Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, Gone Girl, Social Network, bunch of other stuff. Pretty renowned, pretty great at what they do with film scores. So I'm pretty hyped about this, I should say.
Yeah, this is more of a nerd news story. You and I, like, oh man, Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, great pair. I still put on the Social Network soundtrack when I'm like, when I need to get inspired at work. I just remember the scenes that the music was paired to and like him building Facebook and like trying to build something great. Like, they're really, really great together. And we're really excited for Watchmen. Damon Lindelof did Leftovers, a little bit of Loss. I think it's a great pair.
Yeah. Next up, Chevy Chase is 74 years old, now sober, newly sober apparently, and ready to work. The problem, nobody wants to work with him, is the headline from this article. So apparently he wants to come back. But Chevy is like a known commodity as being a total dick.
Yeah.
From his days on SNL up to Community, when like him and Dan Harmon absolutely hated each other. They had to like write him off the show. They had to like barely like have him on set interacting with everyone else. It's like, even if he isn't like as much of a dick anymore because he's sober or whatever, he's in like the right mindset, I feel like no one's going to want him back because he's a dick, or he's been a dick. And it's like, you can't really outrun that.
I have heard his entire career, even back to the National Lampoon days, he has just been a complete asshole. So I'm surprised he's still getting work. And I guess maybe if he's... You're probably more aggravating and ridiculous sober when you have had a problem than you are on, you know, hooked on the bottle. This story is like, it's sad funny. It's kind of depressing.
Yeah.
He's so funny on the screen, but it's what you get when you're an asshole.
The Emmys were last week. We didn't really talk about that because I think the Emmys are kind of a joke now. It's like a popularity count. Like Game of Thrones won 8 awards. It's like last season was terrible. But anyways, Donald Glover, who is his show Atlanta, whatever, is on FX. He had there was an episode this season that was like straight up like a horror episode. It was really good.
Yeah.
But he basically dressed up like as like this weird Michael Jackson-esque kind of like former pop star, and he has like these nasty prosthetics. He's like weird translucent skin. Talks in like a creepy voice. And at the Emmys, he was up for an award, up for Best Actor, and they cut to the crowd, and it was that character. This character's name is Teddy Perkins, and just sitting in the crowd. And so everyone was like, oh, wow, that's Donald Glover. That's kind of funny that he didn't win the award. But then as the show went on, Donald Glover was there, and he has, like, a big beard, so, like, they couldn't cover it up. And so it was like, well, who is that guy? And they were like, oh, well, it must be, like, one of the other stars. But then it showed, like, Lakeith Stanfield took a picture with him. It showed, like, Donald Glover's brother took a picture with him. So it was like, who the hell was this person? And like, there's Issa Rae, who has her show Insecure, was sitting behind this Teddy Perkins character, and apparently had a full-on conversation with him, thinking that it was Donald Glover the entire time. And then there's a picture of Donald Glover with him, and you can see her behind, and she's like, what the fuck is happening?
I wonder how many people are in on this and are just cracking up at the Hollywood trying to figure out what the hell's going on here. That's pretty funny. Good troll, Donald Glover.
Veep is going to conclude in 2019. We knew that this was going to be the final season. They took a year off in 2018. But it's going to be the shortest season ever. It's only going to be 7 episodes. It's usually 10, 10 to 13. I think the shortest season up to this point was the first season, which only had 8, which is standard for like a first season show. But only 7 episodes. Kind of sad.
Kind of sad. Probably has a lot to do with the Julie Louise Dreyfus cancer situation. Mm-hmm. But it's run its course. I'd hate to see them run it into the ground. It's hilarious. It still holds up today. I don't think it's declined in quality.
No, not at all.
And I'm just glad it's not getting canceled or anything. We'll get to see it through. And boy, we really enjoy the show. Very similar to Arrested Development in the speed of quips on the show.
It's also impressive that like they didn't buckle under the pressure of the ridiculousness of like our real political landscape.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like it stayed funny without like poking too much shit at like real life stuff.
Yeah, which is good. You don't want to take that low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, yeah. Speaking of other things that are ending, Game of Thrones is obviously ending after its next season next year. Game of Thrones author George R. R. Martin, though, didn't want the show to end. Shocking.
He didn't want the paychecks to end.
He said, we could have gone 11, 12, or 13 seasons. And I think he's saying that just because he knows he's never going to finish the book.
Yeah.
Or the books. I don't even know how. I think there's only one book left. Maybe there's two. I have no idea. And it's like, if the show just keeps going, then like he can just keep acting like he was going to write all of that. But now that like there's a definitive endpoint, it's like, just write the damn book, George. We know what happens. Just put it on the page.
I think you and I are of the mindset that we'd rather see a show end cohesively and with quality than drawn out. So it's good that the showrunners didn't let R.R. Martin influence them too much in this decision. And I wonder what that looked like behind the scenes where it's like, yo, we're going to end this thing. So can you help us here?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Last news story of the week. This is just like the stupidest story. People were going crazy on social media. Bert and Ernie, the famous Sesame Street characters, officially not gay lovers. They're just really good friends, really good best friends. The Sesame Street production company came out and was like, we will not disclose sexual orientation of our characters, but they're just friends, okay? And then, like, there was a bunch of, like, think piece articles that was like, here's why it matters that they're gay. It was like, oh my God. All this stuff.
Who is thinking about this stuff? This is who a kid cares? Show. Who cares? They're clearly gay, and that's fine.
Oh my God. Just such a ridiculous thing. The fact that, like, Sesame Street felt the need to come out and say that. Oh, man.
Or not come out.
Yeah.
Ew.
All right, so that's it for news this week. We got some trailers for you. First up is Captain Marvel. Finally released a trailer for that after they released some images a couple weeks ago. So it stars Brie Larson, Jude Law, Ben Mendelsohn, Sam Jackson's in there as Nick Fury with two eyes. So basically, I don't know. This trailer doesn't give a lot away, and I still can't really tell like exactly what the story is. It's just probably just going to be a standard, we have to save the world or fight this alien race kind of story.
Yeah.
Right off the bat, though, I it was like, guess what? This is set in the 90s, guys. Like, she crashes through the Blockbuster, so it's like...
Blockbuster?
I am actually worried about this movie after watching this trailer.
Really? I don't think it gave enough away to be worried about it.
Brie Larson did not seem like she was trying very hard.
She seemed a little bored.
Or what she, like, whatever they were giving her. Like, they're giving, like, this kind of, like, it's not supposed to be an origin story, but they're giving, like, this weird backstory where, like, she remembers being a human or something, or, like, a fighter pilot, and then, like, but that might not be real. And it just, I just don't know if that's intriguing enough. But I get they have to give her some sort of origin and, like, make her related to Earth. Like, I don't know.
It didn't sway me either way. I wasn't like, oh my god, Infinity War Part 1 trailer, let's watch that 20 times. I think I watched it like 2-3 times, and I was like, yeah, it looks okay. I think we need trailer 2. Mm-hmm. See her in action.
See Ben Mendelsohn. That'd be nice.
Wonky in the suit, yeah. Do you think maybe we did see Ben Mendelsohn? Is he one of the aliens?
He's one of the aliens, but he also like is himself at times because they can shapeshift.
Okay.
Best moment of the trailer, though, was Brie Larson punching an old lady in the face on a bus.
Apparently that's some aliens in disguise, and she knows how to hunt them or something. Yeah. You and I aren't super comic book nerds, so we don't know much about this. Apparently it has a really crazy origin and story, so we'll see how they handle that.
Yeah. Next up is Galveston. So Galveston is actually based on a novel that Nick Pizzolatto wrote. Nick Pizzolatto created True Detective. And so like Galveston was like his biggest book that he had written. It's sort of like this crime thriller. It's actually being directed by Melanie Laurent, who is like a French actress. She was in like the Before Sunset, Before Sunrise movies that Richard Linklater made with Ethan Hawke. So kind of interesting move there. Ben Foster is in it. Elle Fanning is in it. Basically, it's like Ben Foster is some sort of, you know, crime man.
He's a crime man.
And he goes to like some hit or some robbery or theft or something. And like his partner gets shot. And then he sees like this girl there that's Elle Fanning. And basically they go on the run together. Feels like very dramatic. Feels like it's going to be like fairly low budget, like very indie, but I'm like pretty into this, and I love Ben Foster. I don't know if Ben Foster makes bad movies. He just is such a great actor.
When I started watching, I was like, well, we can probably cut this, but then I watched it, I was like, this looks really good. Mm-hmm. It's two people in a bad situation on the run. There will be more bad things that happen to both of them. There's a little baby girl involved. It looks really good, and it looks like it's going to be sad. I can kind of see the ending coming.
Yeah.
But Elle Fanning continues to pick really dark, messed up roles.
Yeah.
I think she might be in another one on this list somewhere. It looks really good.
Yeah. Next up, Mary Poppins Returns. I think they had released a teaser like a really long time ago, and we might have talked about it, but this is like an actual full-length trailer. So Emily Blunt is Mary Poppins. Lin-Manuel Miranda's in here. Ben Whishaw is a character in here. I can't remember the... Emily something is the other one.
Mortimer.
Yes, there you go. And I have no feelings about this movie at all.
I have no connection to Mary Poppins, except the quip in the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. I'm Mary Poppins, y'all. that's all I could think of when she started floating down on the umbrella, is that quip. But I'm sure it'll be fun, and it'll probably sell buckets.
It's weird, though, because like they do like this... At least in the trailer, they did, like, this weird, like, actual, like, 2D animation cartoony kind of thing mixed in with, like, the real-life actors, and I am not about that. That looked terrible.
Oh, see, that is what gets me excited.
Really?
I think that we need to return to form, like, to cartoons like that, because everything is just super cheap CG trash these days from all animation companies and studios, and I really miss the hand-drawn days, so that actually hit with me
and got me
more interested.
I just didn't like the melding with, like, real world. I don't like that.
I do. I'm excited for that.
Agree to disagree. Next up is Hunter Killer. So I saw this trailer before.
Me too.
What was the movie we reviewed last week? I can't remember.
Jesus. Predator.
Oh, Predator. Yeah. So I saw this before Predator, and I was like, holy shit, this looks so bad, but also so entertaining. So this is about an untested American submarine captain teams with U.S. Navy SEALs to rescue the Russian president who has been kidnapped by a rogue general. Gerard Butler is in this because, of course, he's in it.
Of course he is.
Common is in this. Gary Oldman is in this. What in God's name? It's just such a weird cast, and, like, God, does it look so bad, but so, like, entertaining bad?
Yeah, it looks, like, good on, like, the film and, like, the CG looks pretty good. I was like, this looks like all-out war.
Yeah.
And it's going to be bad. There's going to be shitty lines. Like, I can just see, like, how Aquaman delivered the line when he gets on the sub, like, permission to come aboard. Like, just really bad, like, seagoing puns. But it actually looks like a good, fun time. Like, better than, like, Geostorm looked.
Oh, yeah, 100%. So that comes out at the end of October, and I gotta be honest, we might have to change up our schedule.
We might have to, yeah. Hunter Killer.
Also, just such a terrible name.
Terrible.
Oh, man. Next up, this is the last movie trailer we got. We got four TV trailers after this. Apostle. So this is a Netflix film that is releasing on October 12th. Stars Dan Stevens, Michael Sheen.
Beast.
Michael Sheen is basically a cult leader, and this is like a period piece. So this is like, I don't even know, like the 1800s would be my guess. And Dan Stevens is going there to like rescue his sister from this, 1905 is what it says, from this cult. Directed by Gareth Evans, who made the Raid movies. So you know there's probably got to be decent action in here, some sort of martial arts kind of fighting. This is a horror film, I'd say.
And
a violent one at that, it looks like.
It looks like there's going to be some scenes where I can, like, I'm struggling to not look away. There's some torture-related teases in this trailer. And, again, I started watching. I was like, well, we can maybe cut this one. But it looks riveting and like a watch that you and I are going to watch once and never want to watch again.
Yeah. And I love that kind of, like, cult stuff.
Yeah.
To be honest. Yeah. But yeah. So... all right. Next up, so we got TV trailers now. Haunting of Hill House, another Netflix series here, another Netflix horror series, actually. Haunting of Hill House is based on like a novel from the 50s by Shirley Jackson. It's like pretty widely regarded as like the best horror novel of all time. But it's apparently also like kind of like psychological horror too, as well as like maybe some sort of paranormal kind of stuff. I was a little confused by the trailer, to be honest. Just didn't really know. It seems like there's timeline jumping. It seems like there's different families or sets of characters that they're focusing on. Created by Mike Flanagan, who made Hush, Oculus, Gerald's Game.
Yeah.
The second Ouija board movie that was actually decent. Stars Carla Gugino, Mikhail Huisman, I have no idea. I still can't figure out his name. Dario from Game of Thrones. Timothy Hutton.
Okay.
Bunch of other people that you'll notice as like bit players in a bunch of other movies. But this is 10 episodes. I can't tell if it's supposed to be like an ongoing series or something, but I liked it. I think I'm interested.
Yeah, the next couple we're going to talk about, we're getting close to October here, and I almost want to write a piece about like five horror shows that you should keep your eye on, because some of this stuff looks awesome, and I'm just glad that we're getting someone like Mike Flanagan show running and directing and creating awesome horror stuff on Netflix. You know, it's pretty dry when we have to continue to just hope that American Horror Story is good, and you know, Channel Zero, I've heard from you, is okay, but there's going to be an influx of horror TV shows, and I'm all about it, and this looks really creepy, dark, and good. The trailer opens with kids just talking about like what would happen in a dream if their bodies turned into mush and they kept giving themselves shots and were hung up by their necks, and would you wake me up then? And I was like, what are they saying?
Hell.
This looks great.
Yeah. That is October as well, so that's coming pretty soon.
Sweet.
I hope my mic is catching that loud-ass siren. All right, next up is Into the Dark, another horror series. We have talked about this before. We talked about it, might have even been last year, but we talked about it a long time ago. Basically,
I don't even remember talking about this.
This is an anthology series on Hulu, and each episode, there's going to be one like movie-length episode that is released each month for the next year, and it's set on like a holiday during that month. So, of course, they're going to start out with Halloween. bunch of actors are in this. Dermot Mulroney, I think, is going to be in this Halloween one. We see Jimmy Simpson, who plays one of the McFoyle brothers and is also in Westworld, or was Westworld. As another one. This looks wild.
This looks so fun and campy and creepy and weird. And the fact that they're doing one a month is going to keep this top of mind for people, I think. I think it's really creative, and yeah, it looks great.
Yeah, the weird, like, gigantic stuffed animal looking thing.
Yeah, it looks like they're going to open with Halloween and some guy being hunted by some giant bunny bear stuffed animal that, like, the size of an 8-foot man with glowing eyes, and it is very off-putting.
Yeah, it is weird. Yeah, but I'm pretty pumped for that. I like the idea of setting each thing on a holiday. I think, like, that lends itself to messing around with stuff. So
when is it out? I'm really excited for this.
I think it's end of October. Is when the first episode is premiering. Cool. Next up is Homecoming. This is an Amazon series. This stars Julia Roberts, Bobby Cannavale, Shea Whigham, Dermot Mulroney also in here. Nice. Sissy Spacek is in here. This is actually based on a podcast series that was like a fictional podcast, but like Oscar Isaac was one of the voices for the podcast, which is crazy. And apparently it was very successful. So we get this on Amazon, developed by Sam Esmail, who made Mr. Robot. So that's pretty good. He directed all the episodes. Homecoming is a psychological thriller that centers on Heidi, a caseworker at a secret government facility, and a soldier eager to rejoin civilian life. This looks amazing.
It really does. I can't handle all this great-looking horror that's coming out. I guess this isn't really horror, it's a psychological thriller more like, but as the actors kept showing up, you got Lip from Shameless as well. Mm-hmm. As the actors kept showing up and the director hit the screen, I was like, created by Sam Esmail, this looks incredible.
Yeah,
we're gonna have to add this to our list ASAP.
I can't wait to watch it. And also, like, I'm like, should I listen to the podcast too?
I know. I almost don't want to. I don't want spoilers.
Yeah, true. That's a good point. But it definitely kind of has that Mr. Robot vibe / feel to it as well, which I kind of like.
It looked like it was shot really, like, flat and without a lot of color. Almost like 90s VHS type of filter to it. Julia Roberts, where has she been? So I'm excited to see her in hopefully a really promising Amazon, like, flagship show. Looks really great.
Yeah. And then the last trailer this week is for The Romanoffs. So this is from Matt Weiner?
I think it's Weiner.
Yeah, who made Mad Men. So this is also on Amazon. This is an anthology series set around the globe, featuring 8 separate stories about people who believe themselves to be descendants of the Russian royal family. Crazy cast. It's straight up just like won't even let. Aaron Eckhart, Catherine Hahn, Christina Hendricks, Diane Lane, Amanda Peet, Corey Stoll. Freaking so many people. There's too many names to name. I'm kind of interested. I don't know if I'm sold on this.
I'm sold just because it's Matthew Weiner, and I saw a ton of Mad Men alums in the trailer, a ton of good actors. It's going to be something that is along the pace of Mad Men, which is slow and building up to really learning about these characters. Anything he does, I'll definitely give a shot, but this looks like something that our another Glitch Up founder, Pat, my brother, would just make fun of me for watching and just be like, yeah, you love really, really critically acclaimed TV shows, huh? Mad Men. Yeah, that's really, really good show.
So that is that's November, I believe. All right, so that is it for trailers. So that was a lot of news. Holy shit, that's like the most amount of news we've 40, ever had.
Almost 45 minutes, Jesus.
But time to talk about a simple favor. We'll start out with a non-spoiler review. I will give you a quick rundown. 84% on Rotten Tomatoes. Critic score, average rating of 7 out of 10. That's pretty good. 82% audience score. Critic consensus, twisty, twisted, and above all, simply fun. A Simple Favor casts a stylish mommy noir spell, strengthened by potent performances from Anna Kendrick and Blake Lively. So this is about two like elementary school moms who one is like a single mom, that's Anna Kendrick, very like typical housewife kind of style, and then Blake Lively is like this like successful PR, vulgar, like, kind of, like, intense woman, and they end up on, like, a play date, and they become friends, and then Blake Lively disappears.
Yep.
And so that's basically all you need to know. Directed by Paul Feig, like I said before, who directed Bridesmaids, Spy,
and Ghostbusters. The absolute trash Ghostbusters movie. Yeah. Henry, Freaks and Geeks, I think.
Oh, yeah. He's done a lot of stuff.
The Heat.
Yep. Henry Golding plays Blake Lively's husband in this. He is, like, a pretty hot commodity right now because he was just in Crazy Rich Asians as the lead in that. He's pretty good. I was actually surprised. Like, I've never seen him. I didn't see Crazy Rich Asians, but I thought he was pretty good.
Yeah, I immediately was like, who's he? Yeah. He's not bad. he's having a year.
Yeah. So this movie, for me, I liked it. But I think that it had a downfall where basically, like, I liked it, but I would have came out of it saying, wow, I loved it if Paul Feig didn't direct it. And I think it's because there's this sort of uneven tone throughout the movie where they try to inject comedy into situations randomly. And, you know, sometimes it works. Like, I laughed at some stuff, but it was also like I didn't need that because it took me out of the serious of the moment. And of, like, what was building. Because there's some pretty serious, heavy stuff in this movie. And then they undercut it with shitty jokes that is just like, well, this doesn't line up.
Yeah.
But ultimately, it is a very entertaining movie. The actors are all great. The kid actors suck. Thank God there wasn't, like, too much of them. But, like, Blake Lively is outstanding. Anna Kendrick is outstanding. Henry Golding is outstanding. There's some ancillary characters that are just kind of, like, I don't know, stereotypical, and it's just like I could have done without them, and it was just like they were there for no reason, for like maybe one reason to like showcase like what other people think of our two main characters. But yeah, I mean, I ultimately liked it. It is like a nice like updated noir story, and I think it was entertaining. I was glad that I saw it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I like Paul Feig. I think Bridesmaids is a classic. Mm-hmm. Anytime that's on, I watch it. Spy, I thought was okay. Freaks and Geeks, really good. Ghostbusters, trash. So I was really happy to see him to return to a good movie. This movie was good. I thought it was hilarious, mysterious, stylish, sad, romantic, sexy, and kind of nuts. And, like, that's the problem. The tone, all over the place. I think they did a good job balancing it in the first act. It got a little shaky in the second act. The third act, boy, it just jumps off a cliff here. They really found a good way to mix the dark comedy and a thriller, but halfway through it shifts gears, mm-hmm. and it's like shifting gears like how if I was learning how to drive clutch, I don't know, like it was bad.
That,
like,
is a great way to put it. It needed to pick a lane and stay in that lane, and
yeah,
it didn't.
Yeah, and it did a fantastic job early mm-hmm. on, and I was really into it. I still came out of it thinking that was good, but you're right, it could have been great.
100% agree with you, by the way, that it goes bonkers off the rails at one point, and like once it did that, it was like there's no coming back. No. And it kind of detracts from the ending in a way. Also, there is one of the most ridiculous, like almost post-credit scene, like pre like credit scenes, that was just like so stupid. It was like, wow, this is definitely a Paul Feig movie.
Yep.
I think this movie actually would have worked better if they adapted it into like a miniseries a la Sharp Objects.
Yeah,
or Big Little Lies.
Yeah, it was Gone Girl mixed with the Paul Feig movie, and it was almost perfectly balanced, but then it got a little too comedic.
And I just think that, yeah, and I think when you give it more time, obviously it makes it a little easier to balance those different tones and those different gear shifts, but also it would have let us, you know, get more backstory. I don't think there was enough backstory for Anna Kendrick's character. They kind of hint at stuff, but I don't think it's fully realized and fully earned some of her turns.
And then there wasn't enough time for some characters to grow together in the movie, mm-hmm. for things in the movie to be believable, things that happen.
And then again, like I was saying, like those ancillary characters, those side characters, like the other parents at the school, they try to make them like appear randomly, but it's just like, I don't care about these characters and they're not adding anything. So, like, if it was a longer series, there you go. We get to learn a little bit more about minor characters, but
I agree with the supporting cast aside from the FBI agent. I thought he was hilarious.
Oh, yeah, and, no, he was, yeah, he was great.
More of a polar opposite of what you'd expect for an FBI agent. Yeah. He was just calling people on their shit the whole movie.
Yeah, I
like
that.
And, like, we complained that there wasn't really enough time to make some of these things believable, but I thought this movie was way too long, too. Like, maybe they could have shaved 20 minutes off and it would have felt a bit tighter, but I don't know what you'd shave.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have much more to say, non-spoiler.
I do. I don't get why everybody's all over Blake Lively's outfit. I thought she looked absolutely ridiculous.
Oh, I thought they were great. They were killer.
Like, she's hot, but she looks... this whole movie revolves around people trying to get with her and these ridiculous outfits she's in. Give me Anna Kendrick all day. She plays this subtle weirdness, but adorable, but sexy so well.
This movie is like essentially like what my dreams are. And they just put it on screen. So, like, that's why it gets, like, an extra 100 points for me.
Your dream is a, like, dorky Anna Kendrick and a mannishly dressed Blake Lively?
Yes, exactly. Okay, exactly.
Got it.
Did you see, I posted on Instagram after I saw the movie earlier this week, like, 8 different suit, like, woman suits that Blake Lively wore. She rocks suits better than I rock suits. Like, I was...
It's true.
I was almost offended. Like, it's not fair.
It is true.
I also don't like... Blake Lively is really good. Like I said, the acting is really good. But there's, like, people saying, like, if this movie was better, Blake Lively would get a Best Supporting Actress nomination. I was like, not a chance.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
She's not that good.
I don't know about that. Maybe Anna Kendrick, but even though this is kind of the similar character that she plays in every movie, I don't know about either of those going with the supporting actor.
Anything else or grades?
No, let's do grades and summary.
I'll let you go first.
All right, A Simple Favor. It's a fun ride with a confusing mix of dark comedy, mystery, sex, style, and substance. A bit more or less time on the chopping block might have helped it more, but it's unique enough of a movie to warrant a watch, and I'd give it a B-.
All right. So I'm going to try my hand at the summary thing here.
You got to do it beforehand. You can't do it on the fly.
I'm doing it on the fly.
Oh, God.
A Simple Favor is a highly entertaining film with powerful... acting performances. I shouldn't say powerful, not like emotional or something like that, but like strong acting performances that really lead the way. Unfortunately, it's handled unevenly by its director and by the script, leaving sort of threads just hanging that don't feel fully resolved or earned. But ultimately, it's a fun noir story. You'll be entertained, and you can look at Blake Lively. That's all that matters.
Yeah.
So I would also actually give it a B minus. A B. I give it a B.
Oh, okay. A B just because of Blake Lively's outfits. That's what moved it up a notch for you.
Yes, and also the fact that I remember that I gave The Predator a B minus. So
that is true. You're never gonna live that one down, buddy. You're already getting called out.
All right, so that's non-spoilers for you guys. We will talk about spoilers now. So if you haven't seen the movie or you don't want to be spoiled, stop listening. All right. I want to talk about Anna Kendrick's character first off.
Okay.
So I liked what they were trying to do because I do feel like this was one of the twists in a way, was like her kind of having that dark side. And at first, I thought that maybe she killed Blake Lively or got rid of her or something because she just like wanted to move into that life. And so I like also assumed that she did something to kill her husband. But then they kind of, like I kind of respected it because they were like, okay, well, like, this isn't actually the twist. It was like, we faked you out on that. And I was like, okay. But then they also still try and, like, make her darker, but they don't really let her lean into it enough. They kind of, like, leave her as that. And then also they just make her, like, this weird detective that, like, I understand. Like, I guess people would do that. But then... it's another shift, again, just shifting gears constantly, and there's another shift, that graveyard scene, once you hit the graveyard scene, it's like, this movie has no idea what it's doing anymore, because then she becomes, like, this mastermind that thinks she knows everything, and is like, didn't just go to the police to talk about this woman that is, like, blackmailing you and faked her death?
Neither did the husband. Yeah. Neither did the husband. I mean, this is all over the place by that point. I couldn't keep track of the backstabbing and whose plan was being played out now.
Yes.
Who was partnering with who that last act. I actually got confused. I was like, so which scenario is playing out right now and who's winning this backstabbing contest?
I actually liked the husband. I didn't think that he was too all over the place. They had the cheating thing kind of in there with like his TA or whatever.
Yeah.
And they didn't really ever point out whether it was true that they had the threesome with her or like not, or if he was just like cheating with her. But ultimately,
he got shit on this whole movie.
Yeah, but ultimately, he wasn't that bad of a. He didn't do.
He
that
was a good dude.
Terrible stuff. Like he was a decent father. He had a job. Like, yeah, she got on him because he didn't write another book, but he was a professor at a college.
Yeah.
It was just like, I just...
And he just made too many decisions with his penis, but he got screwed this whole movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And played.
And I actually respect the fact that, like, he didn't go to the cops right away, but then the fact is, like, once we had this weird backstabbing plot in motion where they were framing him and then not framing him or whatever, and, like, the FBI is, like, at his house... And then it's like, how long have you known? And then he's like, I've known for like this week, blah, 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 blah. It's like, well, you want to just all of a sudden change your heart and change your story just because like the cops are there. Wouldn't you just like try and see it out? Like, I just didn't. It's just like that. Those twists, like you said, the backstabbing was just confusing. And it didn't really work with the character motivations.
And yeah, every couple minutes they were shifting whether or not I should be sympathetic or rooting for or hating Blake Lively's character.
Mm-hmm.
The whole movie, I'm like, oh, she's got a hand in this. And then it's like, oh, my sister and my dad were beat. And this is just our plan of, you know, escaping that life. But then she murders her sister. And I'm like, I don't know if I'm supposed to be rooting for you or hating you or if you're a villain. Like, pick a goddamn side here.
Yeah. Yeah. They really needed to hash out character motivations and like, who we're supposed to be rooting for. Because, like, and then, because then once they did that, once they had the graveyard scene, I was like, I don't even want to root for Anna Kendrick anymore because Anna Kendrick is doing the stupidest shit out of them all.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I was very confused and conflicted on what I'm supposed to be doing this last 30 minutes of the movie.
God, it was brutal.
Let me ask you this. Did you call the major twist? I believe the major twist would be that she has a twin and her twin was the one who died. I kind of figured it had to do something with a twin because your twins, you get tattoos, matching tattoos, and like they kept harking on the fact that like, oh, that's her tattoo. It must have been her. There's like something was off at the funeral. Like we obviously knew Blake Lively was going to come back, so I was leaning towards twins. But boy, there was just so many other little twists that I certainly didn't see coming. Half the movie I thought it was Anna Kendrick. Half the movie I thought it was the husband. Half the movie I thought it was a twin. So while I did kind of call it, I didn't call it.
No, I didn't call that. I just assumed it was, like, someone that looked similar to her. But then to be honest, when, like, they first showed her, I was like, okay, well, she has to be coming back. But then as the movie, like, kind of moved forward in the next 5 to 10 minutes, I was like, maybe she isn't coming back. And I was like, maybe it was, like, the husband did it, and this is about, like, or Anna Kendrick did it, and this is about Anna Kendrick. Like, they're going to reveal Anna Kendrick being fucking
wacko. So it
kept
you guessing.
Yeah. And then I was like, or maybe the husband did it, and it's going to be about, like, this, like, violent relationship that's going to happen between him and Anna Kendrick now. But then obviously they switched it. So, like, I respected that, but it was also, but then it was just kind of like.
It kept us guessing, but it also kept us confused in the wrong ways.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, not confused about who done it, confused about who did it and who should I be rooting for right now.
You can have twists, but make the twists at least make sense and, like, not just. Like, you're doing twists just for twist's sake, just to mess with the audience's head. It's like. A good twist has a point and, like, actually works well. It's not just like, oh, we need to throw in another twist right here.
Yeah. I got a question for you. Who do you think Anna Kendrick's baby daddy is? Anna Kendrick, like,
it's got to be the half-brother, right?
The half-brother?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was leaning towards, too. I saw something on Reddit that, speaking of Blake Lively, she wears literally red gloves in a scene early in the movie. She's literally red-handed. In one of her early outfits.
Oh, the most ridiculous outfit that she had was the one where it was like, she was wearing like a suit with like a button-up shirt, and then, or the suit vest with a button-up shirt, and then she just rips off the sleeves and like the buttons right here, and it's just the vest with the cuffs and the cufflinks. That was stupid as hell. I couldn't
respect
that. She
looked ridiculous all movie. Her stupid top hat, she looked like freaking Paddington Bear half the time. I gotcha on that one. That's what I call my wife every time she tries to wear a top hat. Is, oh, I'm going out Paddington Bear tonight.
The scene where Anna Kendrick is first moving in and she's like getting rid of all the stuff in the closet, and then she comes back in and everything's back up there. I didn't like that scene.
Oh, I thought it was great. I was like, oh, it's about to go down. But then again, they shift away from that tone.
Yeah. That's why I didn't like it. And it was also like, how did Blake Lively get in there that fast, put everything back up, quickly. And then get out within like 20 minutes, 5 minutes?
Yeah. And then they immediately cut to her talking about like Supernatural.
Yeah.
And I was like, are they really going down this road too?
Yeah.
And again, I saw something on Reddit where it's like, this movie is mirroring how like schizophrenic and chaotic Blake Lively's life is. It's not committing to a certain tone. It's jumping all over the place, just like she does. And I'm like, okay, that's a reach. Paul Feig isn't that much of a genius.
He's not a goddamn like artistic visionary. He's
not David Fincher.
Yeah. Also, David Fincher would never do that. David Fincher made this movie in Gone Girl, and it's
exactly.
It's level-headed.
And it was terrific.
Yeah.
It's like an A-plus movie.
Yeah.
How about the end when, like, I don't think Anna Kendrick's character would sit there and monologue for 5 minutes when a gun is drawn. She would just, like, say, I have a camera, you're caught. She was risking multiple lives in that scene, and it just took me out of it.
Blake Lively would have shot her right away. I don't know why Blake Lively wouldn't have shot her. Like, she was also, like, she was, like, already caught. And also, why didn't she, Blake Lively ran out then? She was already caught red-handed, like you just said before. She was caught on camera shooting her husband and holding up a gun and confessing. So it was like, you have nothing to lose. You might as well kill Anna Kendrick. And I feel like that's something that she would do. And then she didn't.
And then she was like, this feels like a double suicide murder or double murder suicide. Yeah. And then she's stalling and, you know, you get 5 more minutes of quips back and forth. Another thing I saw on Reddit, this movie answers the question, what if Gone Girl was written by Joss Whedon? And that's exactly what that scene felt like. Two powerful women quipping back and forth as there's a gun in the scene.
Two things at the very end. This is what I thought you were going to talk about. So they cut to the other parents from the school smoking weed at the dude's house and the FBI rushing in. And then 2 minutes later, the dude is driving and hits Blake Lively.
Yeah.
And it's like, weren't the cops just at your house? How would you be able to watch the live stream, live feed, get over there, somehow get in your car and beat the cops over there? And then he gets out, and then he gets out and says like the Prius thing. Granted, the Prius line actually made me chuckle, but it was like still so
America's
dumb.
Hybrids, silent but deadly. Yeah. So dumb, so cringy, so unbelievable, so a product of bad editing because clearly that was either added in post or the pot scene was added in post or I don't know. It was bad.
And then the very, very end, the like post-credit scene, pre-credit scene that I was talking about where it's Blake Lively in prison playing basketball.
Yeah.
That was just a culmination of like the problems of this movie.
So stupid. She's driving to the lane and apparently it's 1-on-8.
Yeah.
Because she dribbles around like 12 different people. I can't tell who's on whose team. And then as she goes up to the net, the people in prison guard in prison uniforms just have their hands up and aren't really guarding her.
Yeah.
I feel like she didn't know how to play basketball, and they're like, okay, drive to the lane. She's like, what?
Oh, my God. Yeah, yeah. So that stuff was just kind of, like, very reflective of the actual problems of this movie.
One more note I had is Reddit/Sarah, actually, my wife pointed out that the Aviation Gin is Ryan Reynolds' gin company.
Yes.
The gin used in all the martini scenes.
It is. It is. As a matter of fact, I got stuff to make gin martinis last night because of this movie. I'm, like, straight up just going to, like, make martinis all the time now. Couldn't find Aviation Gin, though. I was pretty upset.
I came home and mixed myself a gin-based cocktail, too. I was like, that sounds really good, an ice-cold gin drink. And I'm a gin fan originally. I believe I snuck you gin for your first alcoholic drink ever many, many years ago. So let's get you to return to form here.
Yeah, I'm gonna hit it back up. The only other thing that I have is just the little kid, the son, Nicky or whatever his name was, I think.
Yeah.
That kid was literally the worst child actor of all time.
See, I see that complaint, too, and I didn't think he was bad. I think it was just a misbehaved shithead of a kid that screams about a lot of stuff. Like, he was just acting like a kid.
No.
I didn't feel like he was reading lines.
The entire time, it's him in his, like, high-pitched yelling kid voice, no matter the scenario.
Yeah. He's like,
no, but he'd be normal somewhat.
He's like the kid from The Babadook, just screaming the whole time. But I guess that kid had mental issues. This kid is supposed to be normal.
Yeah.
But if that was your mom, you'd have mental issues, too, and you'd be screaming the F-bomb
like
and stuff.
He was annoying. Every time that he talked, I was like, oh, my God, they should have just killed the kid.
Wow. That would have been a different movie.
I'm sure they could have turned it into a joke. I'd imagine that's what they would do.
One other thing I'm just thinking about now is how about the Anna Kendrick and guy from Crazy Rich Asian sex scene when they're like they're holding hands, they're getting close, and then it's like slow-mo.
Yeah.
Yeah. was like, what is this, 50 Shades right? all of a sudden?
That is exactly what it was like.
It was weird. He's like holding her hands down. I was like, okay, okay. There was a guy sitting behind me that just like every weird scene was like, I was like, who, baby? Like making all these comments like, yeah, yo.
Oh my God.
It's like, oh, that's really annoying.
Oh,
It was a fun movie though. You know, it could have been great, but it was good.
Yeah, yeah. And I think sometimes that's what hurts the most with like these kind of movies that we do like is like when we can see the ways that it could have been like an outstanding movie and it's like you could have done this so easily and you don't. And so like that's kind of like what hurts sometimes. That's why like when we talk about these movies that we like but like had a couple issues, it's like we really key in on those issues, so it might sound like we don't like the movie as opposed to like when we talk about The Predator and we just kind of like trashed it but also laughed at it where it was like that. So like it's still good. It just could have been amazing.
Yeah, and that's easy for us to say as we sit in our houses not making movies or films. So credit to Paul Feig. He made a good movie, but couple other changes and could have been really great, and I'm sure he'll figure that out. And this is definitely a step up from his last film, which I believe was Ghostbusters.
Yeah. Also, yeah. I just want to say, if anyone does want to give us money to make a movie, we will do it.
We'll do it. Caveat, we know nothing about making... Well, actually, you've written some scripts.
I know
stuff.
A little bit. Yeah, I've written some scripts. I got the script writing down.
Okay.
If basically, in my mind, as a director, is you just hire a bunch of people and tell them what you want them to do, and then they figure out how to do it. And I feel like I could do that.
Well, that's more the producer. I'll be the director. If Steven Soderbergh can shoot a Insane Asylum movie on an iPhone, so can we.
Yeah, and we have the top-of-the-line iPhone products now, so we're ready.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
All right, so, yeah, B from me, B minus from you.
You got it.
And thank you for listening. Go check out Simple Favor. Next week, we will be back with Maniac, right? I think if we can get to some of it.
I think so.
And
Maniac.
Then, and then
yeah, if we can binge it.
Yeah, and then Hold the Dark. So two Netflix things, so you can watch that with us.
Wait, Hold the Dark. What is that? Into the Dark?
No.
Isn't that on Hulu?
Into the Dark. What's Hold the Dark? Into the Dark is that trailer that we talked about before. Hold the Dark is Jeremy Saulnier's Green Room follow-up movie with Jeffrey Wright and Alexander Skarsgård.
That looks tight. Yeah.
So yeah, so those are both Netflix properties. We decided not to do Night School starring Kevin Hart, just to, you know, sort of
you can go see it.
Save
I know
ourselves
you,
and save you guys,
you can go
I guess.
See it and give us a shitty review if you want.
but yeah, thank you for listening. Remember to subscribe and review. I didn't look if anyone gave us a 5-star review and roasted me on iTunes. I'm assuming no one did, but I will leave the offer open. If you go to iTunes, leave us a 5-star review and leave a comment that roasts me, lightly roasts me, or maybe compliments me, I will send you a free piece of Glitch Up merchandise. Please go do it. Also, feel free to share, comment, like on all social media, tell a friend to download. Glitchup.com/support if you want to help us out. Glitchup.com/feedback if you want to give an honest feedback. And yeah, we'll see you next week.